Hello and welcome back to AetherCast, guys. We are now back from our hiatus of God knows how long. But, you know, hey, we're here and we have some Eternal Masters that's come out that we're going to go ahead and chat a little bit about today. Kind of give some of our insights on what this is going to do, maybe for some limited. I don't know if these guys I have on here do any of that, but hey, why not? It's here. We'll do it. And so, I am Matt. We no longer have a Travis. Travis is no longer going to be with us anymore. But, hey, we'll find somebody to hop in with us here for our journey. This week, I do have a couple of Eternal guys here with us. First off, we have Mr. Island Swamp himself, Joe Fiorini. How's it going, man?
Good. Doing good. Good job pronouncing my name.
I actually did it right?
Yes, you did it very well.
Sweet. I think I've heard you, like, you've been on Pittance before, right?
Yeah. No, I was on Cash from Exile.
You were? Oh, dude, you were on there? Oh, I don't know, dude. I don't know if I was on there or not. Who knows, right? Fuck it.
You were there as well.
Oh, sweet. All right. I don't even know anymore, man. It's all
I wouldn't work. Remember either. Don't feel bad.
All right, cool deal. So he is our vintage guy. So since this is the Eternal Master set, a lot of cards, some vintage play. Also, we got some for legacy play. And we have one of the hosts on the Legacy Weapon Podcast, Jamie Keller. How's it going, man?
Going all right. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. Glad y'all could make it with us tonight. Do a little bit of magic talk.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Sweet. Kind of one of the first things I wanted to shoot on was the financial implications of the set. So, who wants to talk first?
So I think that there's kind of three different things to talk about here. One would be how will it make vintage and or legacy more or less accessible? And then just the straight people who are buying it for the fun of the cards. I think Joe's a little bit more knowledgeable on finance than I am, so I'll let him talk first. But I think those are kind of the three areas that are relevant here on just pack worth and then people who maybe you're not going to buy any. It'll still affect you financially if you want to get into the formats. So what do you think, Joe?
Honestly, I'm not the best with MTG finance. I probably make bad decisions as far as it comes to that.
Join the club.
I mean,
hey, I own.
I get that reputation because I write for MTG Goldfish.
That was why I assumed it. I'm the one who owns 53 Ghostfire Blades, so
yeah.
That wasn't a good idea.
Hey, but you
I own 53
what? I went deep on some of the cons, random rares. I spent $9. I got like 400 crap rares from it, and now they're worth about $2 total. So I think I'm a guru. I think I'm a financial wizard, actually, over here.
I think you actually played what a lot of people did with cons, and they were like, oh, man, all these good cards. And if you just didn't buy the fetches whenever they were under $10, like, you just lost.
Well, I did get my fetches. I got my playsets for Legacy, so I'm set. I got one. But, okay, well, with the finance stuff, I am not an economics guy, but we actually did have a Corbin from the Brainstorm Brewery on our show, Legacy Weapon is my intro to Legacy podcast, talking a little bit EMA finance, and Drew is my co-host is a economics major. So you actually picked the worst person to possibly have on, but I'll try to wave the flag. So first, the impact is contentious. And people argue a lot. So literally anything I say, you're probably going to get angry comments that I'm wrong. But the way I see it is all this is doing is flooding the market with some cards. And these are cards which get played. So if demand for Legacy and Vintage stayed the same, if the same people were in the same demand, then you might have a spike or something initially as people are speculating. But if demand stays flat and supply on some of the cards increases, those cards are going to get cheaper. And the other cards, like the reserve list cards, they'll just stay the same. Because they're only valuable because there's a demand, and they're spiking now because people expect there to be a demand. So I see it as
that makes sense. I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, people are saying about how like Lion's Eye Diamond is spiking, so the budget decks aren't budget anymore. Well, that's speculators who expect it to become more popular. But if they all become more valuable long run. If the prices spike long term, that's only because of an increase in demand. which means more people are playing the formats, which I think that's what Joe and I want, is more people to be playing our formats. So absolutely. That's it. I don't want it to be more expensive, but if it's more expensive, that's a sign of a really good thing, of a really healthy and growing, vibrant player base. If, on the other hand, prices don't go up and they do all stay flat because demand is flat, well, then that means that the prices on some of these will go down. You can't get around the reserve list, but if you make Force of Will a $1 card, well, that makes it significantly easier to get into Legacy. And, you know, they're not making it a $1 card, but it's, what, half what it was a month ago? Something like that? I will be picking up Force of Wills. Despite having a Legacy podcast, I own zero Force of Wills, and I will own them in the next year.
The problem with that card is that, yes, it was like, what, a $50 to $70 card when Legacy first started kind of booming, you know, like when SCG started doing a lot of these tournaments and kind of letting it be known, like, hey, we're the Legacy people, and then Force of Will just kept climbing and climbing and climbing. I think last I saw it was like around a 150-ish range. I think it's now listed as around $90. I think one of my big financial tips, I guess, and it kind of happened with pretty much all the limited print set runs, like the Modern Masters type things. They pre-ordered pretty high. After about the first week of play, or, you know, all the openings, whenever the market gets flooded, people trying to sell their money cards, the price drops to its lowest around the first week, week and a half. So if you're going to be buying any of these singles, wait till about a week, week and a half, you know, pushing it at about 2 weeks. From about that point, everything's probably going to start climbing slowly. There's going to be a few cards that will have their spikes, but pretty much everything's a gradual climb from that.
It sounds pretty smart to me. I'm looking right now. I pulled it up, and Force of Will, which was an uncommon, was a high of 112 and is now down to 64. So, cross fingers, that'll keep going down.
Yes. I personally, since I'm the modern guy, I love seeing my cards jump in value and spike. You know, Blood Moon went from a dollar card to like a 50-something dollar card or even higher. You know, I like value in my cards. But I also like to play cards, and I like other people to play cards. So I really couldn't care if my cards aren't gaining value.
Right. Joe will have to speak to Vintage. Yeah. Legacy is more accessible than people think. It is expensive. If you want a top-tier deck, there is certain barriers. But, you know, you can play it budget, but people don't think you can. And you can play it without duels, but people don't think you can. And so anything to lower the barrier or to make people give it a second look and find out that it's not as bad as everyone thinks it is great in my book. It already was growing, despite Star City Games cutting some, not all, but some of its coverage. There are a lot of local shops that are starting growing it up. There's West tournaments that are starting up on a wider scale. I know Card King is kind of trying to fill reach a little bit. But I the idea about just more people having their hands on them. Even if everybody doesn't get a Force Will out of this, they'll have one. So they can trade into Burn, Legacy Burn, or something, if they want to. Anybody can play Legacy if they want to, with a medium to small investment.
Which, I kind of like the last Legacy GP there was. It was like in New Jersey or something like that a while back. Looking at the list from that tournament, I don't even know how long ago now, but people were playing Splinter Twin and adding Force of Wills. They weren't even playing duels. They were literally just playing a modern deck and adding, like, one or two Legacy staples. Like
Brainstorm. There you go.
Yeah.
You made it better.
Good game, you know? So there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to play at least Legacy if you're running, you know, something as old as modern, which, you know, a lot of people have gotten into. Joe, what do you think this is going to do to help Vintage? I know you are so much about trying to get people to play Vintage, and it's awesome to see something like that.
Well, a lot of people might not know that in the United States, most Vintage tournaments are not sanctioned, and they allow proxy cards because most of the people that own a Vintage collection, they really just want to be able to play in tournaments, and allowing proxies creates a higher turnout. And most of the time, you can play about 15 proxies in a lot of events. There's a big tournament coming up this weekend called the NYSE that allows 15 proxies, and then the Eternal Extravaganza is coming up in a few weeks or maybe a month or two, and it's also a 15 proxy tournament. That helps a lot because basically you start out proxying your
reserve list cards, and you're still on the hook for fetch lands, possibly some number of dual lands, you know, Force of Will and things like that. But it does make it a lot cheaper. And there are several cards in Eternal Masters, you know, that will be good for somebody trying to make a deck like that. I'm trying to build my first paper vintage deck. A lot of people don't know I started out playing vintage on Magic Online. I was always interested in vintage, but I was never able to afford playing it, and I started playing it on Magic Online because I could trade into it, and I love it so much that I just want to play it in paper. And, you know, I'm not rich. I can't just go out and spend money on a set of Power 9, but I figured out that the deck I'm trying to play, if I proxy 8 of the Power 9 and 4 dual lands, I can still proxy a Time Vault and one other card, and then I'm on the hook for a lot less to finish out the deck. And subsequently, I'm actually relatively close to getting a deck. And so definitely, you know, having Force of Will drop is going to be a big thing for me.
So this would make it so that cards that people would be proxying now don't have to be proxied, or this makes the ones that they were already paying for cheaper, do you think?
Well, Force of Will was always going to be one of the cheaper cards you were going to have to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be easier. You'd more likely want to proxy a Black Lotus than a Force of Will. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
The fact that there are cards in there that people are going to want to play, that's what I'm getting at. Basically, if I buy 4 Force of Wills, 2 Show and Tells, and 4 Misty Rainforests, I can play a vintage tournament. That's a lot, but it's a lot, you know, it's a lot cheaper than having to buy the entire thing.
Yeah, I am excited that it's kind of taking off, and looks like Legacy might also on Magic Online. I mean, I play in paper, and I like it in paper, but I have tooled around with Vintage very briefly, but online with online proxy type situation. That was Shops about 2 bands ago, so my deck probably is not actually good anymore for all I know, but it was fun to play with.
Yeah, Vintage is a lot of fun. I played Legacy before I played Vintage, and I still like them both, but I just kind of been more into Vintage ever since I got into it, and
okay.
So that's what I primarily play.
So that's, I guess, how it affects the two formats. I guess the other thing would be, you know, that's going to affect you regardless of if you open or buy any packs of Eternal Masters, would be my take on it. You know, I'm actually not sure whether I'm going to purchase any of these packs or not. I'm not if they stay at the $300 a box that they're currently at. That's more than I'm willing to pay.
A big problem that it depends on your area. So a lot of people, depending on where they live, I've heard horror stories where, you know, places are going to be charging $15, $20 a pack. Then there's other places that are like, we're just charging MSRP, you know, we're still going to make our money regardless off of it. But if we're charging that much more, it's going to take us so much longer to move it. So I personally am not going to be playing the lottery. I did it with Modern Masters 2. I decided to buy one of the packs just because the whole cardboard packaging, you know, hey, why not check it out, right? See what it's really like myself.
Ah, you bought into it.
You know,
worked.
Just
their marketing worked.
It worked great. I was like, you know, hey, you know, how would this really be? And I don't think it's that great because almost everybody that opened up packs had, you know, messed up corners and edges and stuff like that. So if you're in it for value and keeping it in primo condition or whatever, you know, it's, you know, I don't think that's going to work. But
they skipped it, and I think that was a good call.
Yeah, for sure. It was a good test. I'm not going to lie. You know, you got to try stuff that's new, right? But I think it's pretty cool. Looking over some of these cards, if y'all just want to touch base real quick on, like, y'all's thoughts on Limited from what you've seen, I personally thought as soon as I saw one of the first, like, goblins get spoiled, I was like, oh, man, they're going to have elves and they're going to have goblins. This is going to be so sweet. They didn't really... I'm kind of disappointed on the goblins aspect of it.
Yeah, goblins seems very minor. I don't know if it's really worth even going with as a tribe, so to speak.
They could have reprinted some of the cards, some of the higher-end cards that, like, Legacy Goblins uses, and still had it been, I think, as successful as I think it'll be. Like, it doesn't seem like there's too many, like, all right, you guys have to play this and this and this. Like, the new Limited format, I don't know if y'all have played any of the Innistrad Limited or the new Innistrad block, but...
A little bit.
It's probably my most fun I've had drafting in any set. It's really deep. You can pretty much play whatever. All the cards are good. They all synergize no matter what color combo you run. It's just really cleanly done. This looks a lot more streamlined. Like, hey, just go mono X color. Maybe splash something else since we gave you some multicolor lands at common.
I guess some colors you can kind of just... I think you could go, for example, white good stuff. They're reprinting about three quarters of a legacy deck called Death and Taxes. Like almost three quarters in there is in here. So you have just a really solid white base and splash something, I think. Not sure you can do that with every color, though. I'm not sure blue, as being like mostly mono blue, would really work out for you in this set, for example.
Yeah, it seems a lot weaker. I mean, I think Counterspell was cool, and everybody flipped their shit whenever they saw a Counterspell reprint. right after.
Yeah.
So, Will, but, I mean, really, that's it for the counter side of the Magic and the blue side. So, I think it looks like it'll be a pretty fair and even synergistic kind of thing.
I agree. I mean, blue has a lot of good stuff, like a lot of good stuff, but I think, as is almost always the case, blue is probably going to do best as the support role to some other color. You can go heavy black and do really well, I think, even just focusing on the color black with Hymn to Turok, with Sinkhole. Like, there's just a lot of really good stuff in black. And honestly, the one I'm most excited about is Cabal Therapy at Uncommon. Because
yes,
it's an amazing card, it's better than it looks, it's skill intensive, it's a little bit exciting, and it's a stupid uncommon with a reprinting that was like $25. So actually get a substantial number back out into the world.
Which I think is awesome that they do that. I mean, they have been known for printing the inconspicuous things that people don't realize are value cards in most of these Modern Master sets. Like they did Kitchen Finks in the Modern Masters ones, you know? Like, that was almost a $10 card, and it finally dropped down to a more reasonable price. It's sweet to see things like that. And, you know, good on Wizards, but the overall value is not there.
I do think you're right. And that's mostly from what I've seen online. Looking at people talk and having... I read a really good article on Goldfish about the estimated value on what you could, you know, turn these over into if you put in a little bit of effort. You know, not the full what would you buy them at, but estimating that you're not going to quite get full value. And I think they estimated the value of a box to be about $200, which sounds okay, but I'm not going to pay $300 for $200 worth of cards.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people, including myself, whenever we have around here where I have a friend that'll buy like a box, he'll have some of us over, have some beers, and we'll all play some sealed. Or, you know, if we have enough people, hey, we'll do a draft. And then he sleeves everything up and makes packs back, and then we draft again. You know, it's something that would be cool to be able to do that, but if you are looking, like most people are, for just certain cards, even as a one or two of, don't play the lottery. Just buy your individual cards.
So there are some cards in here that I really want. You know, my Force of Wills. I don't own any Wastelands. I'm going to get myself some Wastelands. I'm not planning on playing the card lottery. What I actually want to do, though, because this does look really fun. It looks like a great draft environment. What I want to do is I want to get 8 of every common, 4 of every uncommon, and like 24 bulk rares out of the set and make my own like that. Pretend that these are what I opened and, you know, sleeve them up and make my own little cube. I did that with a box of Modern Masters, too. And I'm actually right now sitting next to a shoebox full of sleeved cards from Modern Masters of just whatever I open in the box. And now that's a cube, I guess. I think cube people would probably laugh me out of the room for saying that, but you can draft it, and it's fun.
I mean, yeah, it's drafting. It's, you know, it's more fun. I mean, it's not like the, the power cubes where it's all just fucking badass cards, which, you know, hey, that's fun too. Trust me. It is awesome. But being able to just kind of do something repeatedly, without having to continually buy boxes and just having a good time with your buddies. You know, that's what I think these sets should be about. But, you know, speculators are going to, you know, buy out Force of Wills and Wastelands.
Now, there is some possible good news on it not having the value. I heard a lot of people saying that they're throwing in all the cards. They're doing all the good cards. They started off really strong, spoiling valuable card after valuable card. It was looking really, really good. And that was marketing more than anything else. But people were worried that if they give us literally every card we want, then there's no incentive for them to do an Eternal Masters 2. Like, some people were even saying that was proof that they were not going to support Vintage and Legacy in the future, and they're just trying to get all the money out of us that they can at the last minute. I don't think that's true, but, you know, they were slightly convincing until we found out all the things that they didn't give us. There were huge whiffs on some things which really needed reprint and would have fit in well here and were not reprinted. I know for Legacy, Imperial Recruiter is a Portal 3rd edition card that almost none of them exist, but it's really strong and powerful, so it's about a $200 card. It would have been really easy to reprint, even at Rare, and they just didn't. Rashad and Port is the only now expensive card in Death and Taxes, and it didn't get a reprint. It's even more expensive on Magic Online. Yeah, I don't know too much about the Magic Online marketplace, but I don't think these have very good value on Magic Online, these packs.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead,
packs are going to be a lot worse on Magic Online.
Do we know if they're the same price on Magic Online?
Well, I think they're cheaper. I should know this, but I think they're a little cheaper on Magic Online, like the last Modern Masters set was, because they don't you redeem them and things like that.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of these cards were in Vintage Masters, which Vintage Masters was, I don't know if you guys remember, but it was really popular, and through a miscommunication by Wizards of the Coast, people expected it to be on sale longer than it was supposed to be, and they ended up keeping it, honoring that, and keeping it draftable for longer than it would normally be, and it really screwed with the values on some of the cards. You can get a Dak Faden on Magic Online for $5, a paltry sum, a Flusterstorm for under $5, things like that.
Yeah, I recently bought into Magic Online for Legacy. I bought one Legacy deck on there. And, you know, I built it, and I was like, okay, here's how much it costs. It's not so bad. I'll make a budget. I'll take out the dual land, and I'll put in a shock land for Modern so I can, you know, cut some of the value out, which is, you know, what I might do in paper. It increased the price. The dual land was cheaper than the shock land.
Yeah, the Vintage Masters dual lands for a long time were cheaper. You should check right now, though. This might interest you guys. The dual lands on Magic Online have all spiked in the last few weeks, or maybe just the last week. But I had to rebuy a Volcanic Island the other day, and for a while, like when I was getting into Legacy and Vintage initially, I mean, you get a Volcanic Island from VMA for like between 5 and 10, maybe. It shot up to $30, even for the VMA copies.
Really?
Speculation.
Yeah. They're anticipating that people are going to buy in to the format, and they're hoping that, okay, we get a bunch of dual lands, people maybe want to get into it, and now they're going to have to give us money. Because there weren't that many dual lands, at least not the original Masters Edition ones. The Masters Edition ones are the first dual lands they ever made online. They look like the Alpha Beta Unlimited. They're black bordered with the original card frames. They're super nice looking.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ones I try to only play those because I hate the new frames.
I also hate the new frames, but I'm also very cheap and poor. So
yes, I'm not going to lie to you. I started out with the cheapest versions. Over time, when I would like have a few extra dollars, I'd be like, I could sell this for, you know, X amount of dollars. And if I put in five more dollars, I can get the nicer one. That's how I got what I... You know, what I have. But I don't blame anyone for picking the cheapest, you know, cheapest version of something. I do that quite a bit.
That's exactly how I am. Anytime, you know, people send birthday money or holiday money, you know, first thing I do, I go on TCG Player, like, all right, these are the cards I need. Let's see how many of these I can buy. Ooh, I can get the heavily played version for half the price.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
I did very recently in paper. I try not to trade away, like, reserve list stuff, except for other reserve list stuff. I traded away recently, like, in the past month, a Lion's Eye Diamond. But I traded it for duels. So I feel like that's at least an okay, like, I'm not dumb for trading it away there. I now have 9 of the 10 duels. Not play sets, but singletons. I'm almost there. And I did shell out to make them look not ugly, at least. Because I'm never going to trade them away. I'm going to own them forever. So I'm not going near mint beta or anything, but, you know, maybe moderately played instead of almost damaged.
Yeah, and I think that's what people really need to do whenever they look into getting into an Eternal format, because getting the near mint versions of cards can be really expensive.
Never do that. Never do that if you're trying to start in something, because you could have one deck of near mint cards, or you could have two decks of heavily played cards, and then figure out which deck you like better, or play them both on whichever one's better in the metagame that week. It just gives you so much more enjoyment and so many more options and so much of a better experience.
Have you ever noticed you see, like, you buy a near mint card and it doesn't look really much better than a slightly played or whatever it is card, and you wonder if they really graded it right.
I did send a card back once because I bought a, I think it was slightly played Gaia's Cradle, and I got it on eBay, so yeah, buyer beware, I guess. But it came and it was damaged, like somebody had driven over it with a truck on a gravel driveway. It was sleeve playable if you
slightly
dug a sleeve.
Played, slightly yes. driven over.
Slightly played. And the guy tried to just like give me my money back and disappear back into the internet, and but he had a shop online, so I insisted he needed to send me what I had purchased. And he did, eventually. I won't name names because he made it right, but I really feel like he was trying to scam me over there.
Yeah, I've kind of had that kind of...
Yeah, he was hoping you would...
Yeah, he was hoping that I wouldn't notice, wouldn't care, because, you know, in the sleeve, it actually looked fine. It wasn't until you took it out of the sleeve and looked at it that you realized, oh, this thing has, like, Braille. The Braille Bible is written on this card.
What the hell's the tread on here for?
Ouch.
It looks like your tread's a little bit worn. You may need to change those tires.
Oh. But yeah, so that is my good advice, is to buy cheap and buy budget and just buy smart if you're trying to get into a format. Because people look at the online communities, some of which are great and some of which are not. They'll go on Reddit and they'll see, oh, you have to have dual lands, and oh, you're playing white border, and oh, you need this and that and that and that and that. So if you want in to play Legacy with the fancy people, you need to spend at least $5,000. No, you don't. You know, yeah. If you want to be competitive, you do need. You know, it's going to take hundreds to be a competitive, like take it to a tournament and expect to win kind of deck. But like you said, you can have fun and win many games in. I assume Vintage also. If you just even brought a what would happen if you brought a good modern deck to Vintage? Would you just get laughed out of the room there, or would it still be you win some games?
Well, we had a couple episodes back where we had Trevor, he's a judge, and he runs CardConfidants.com. Trevor went to Eternal Weekend the last time it was, and we talked about a Jund hate on people's infinitely expensive decks. Basically, it ran a whole bunch of hate cards. It ran Fulminator Mages to blow up whatever lands they were going to end up playing, and it was just a sweet build. And it was basically a modern deck plus some expensive lands. You can't get much better than that. So I'll make sure to post the link in there so people can go back and check it back out, because it was pretty funny. After reading some of the cards I'd never seen before, I had to giggle because, you know, I had most of it. So
Goblin Shaman, no, Gorilla Shaman, I'm sure
yes.
four of that list.
Yes, it was.
Gorilla Shaman is a really old card for anybody who doesn't know, but I think it sees real Vintage play too, right?
Yeah, sometimes. It's not as popular as it was in the past, but okay. It can blow up a Mox for one mana. It can blow up, if your opponent's playing Seed of the Synod, see some play in some decks, you can blow that up for one mana.
Yeah, so it's
good.
It's a Gorilla for, I don't know how much, it's a red card.
They call it Mox Monkey.
Yeah, it's a monkey, but you know, for a very expensive, you can blow up artifacts by paying like double their mana cost. But when your opponents are playing zero mana artifacts, that's okay. Sure, I'll pay nothing or almost nothing to kill your entire board of artifacts.
Yeah, it's like
playing Moxen.
Yeah.
You know, have you guys seen the Hate Bears deck that Paul Reitzel played in the Vintage Super League?
No, I haven't.
So that's most of those cards are modern legal. Basically, if you had a modern Hate Bears deck and you went to a Vintage tournament, proxied some Null Rods or played Stony Silence, I mean, you can do some stuff with it. Especially if you added 15 proxy cards to it, you could conceivably beat some people. There's actually a lot of cards that are been printed and, you know, that were modern legal that are very good in Vintage. A lot of people think it's strictly old cards, and it's not the case. The best cards from every set will, you know, quite often find their way into Eternal formats, I find.
Homelands. Gotta get them Spectral Bears.
I don't know. It's
going pretty deep there, buddy.
Wait,
Homelands was him to Turok? No, wait, that was Fallen Empire, wasn't it?
Fallen Empire.
Yeah.
I'm old. I lived through all that.
Oh, I remember buying those packs because they were 50 cents cheaper than buying, you know, unlimited.
You can still buy a pack of Fallen Empires for a couple of dollars.
Yeah. Gosh.
I mean, you wouldn't even get your value out of it, so...
No, you don't.
It's fun. I mean, they're neat to look at. That's about it.
Remember what Magic used to
look at. If nostalgia is worth anything to you, then you might get value out of it.
I think... I could be wrong, so don't quote me on it. And, you know, just between you, me, and the billions of people on the internet who can hear this, I think I heard that Richard Garfield said Fallen Empires was actually his favorite set because it had a really good flavor, and it was tied in well with the mechanics, and at least for the time, the mechanics were very interesting. And all that's true about Fallen Empires, it is bad because compared to everything else, and it's weak. And it's also bad because nobody can remember what's in Fallen Empires versus Homelands, which is just the worst thing which was ever made.
I liked Homelands. I was young and didn't know any better, but I thought the cards were really neat when I was 14 or whatever I was.
I don't know. It might be the whole thing that I deal with my son. Like, he plays Pokemon and he plays Magic. So anytime he sees a card, oh, man, this is so cool. I'm like, dude, this card's – I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a cool-looking dragon there.
Sometimes I wish I could go back to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying it's like you step through the looking glass, you become good at the game, and you see the cards where you're like, okay, this card's actually not any good. You don't care about a Shivan dragon anymore, you know? I mean – I remember trading for Shivan Dragons. Like, I wanted that card really bad, and now they throw it, they give it to you for free in the demo decks they give you at GameStore.
The thing that I have tried to relearn, because you're right, you can't go back to casual. I hate the idea of casual, because I don't even know what people mean when they say casual. Some people mean, when they say casual, they mean vintage. And some people, when they say casual, they mean a draft deck that wasn't very good.
It means bad to me. It means terrible decks. Well, like, if you beat them, they're going to cry because your thing is unfair and you should – I mean, it's a game. You're trying to win, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you're not playing to win, why are you playing? I'm not trying to be a jerk, you know?
The problem with casual, if you're going anywhere outside of your own, like, house, is that it means such different things to different people. You might be accidentally bringing a knife to a gunfight, or you might be bringing a nuclear bomb to a knife fight, and you won't know until you're there. Well, because that's the thing. Like, some people I've seen, oh, I want to test out this new deck I made. It's not really a format legal, so I guess it's casual. And, oh, it's a turn one win deck every single time with four – oh, you're playing four Black Lotuses in your proxy casual deck. Fine. Awesome.
Or you run across that asshole that brings balance to the table, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was me. Oh, shit. Sorry. My bad.
So I actually like EDH, which people can argue semantics over whether that's an eternal format, but that's another thing they were trying to support here was some cards that are good in EDH, especially some of the multicolored cards. I feel like EDH, or maybe Canadian Highlander, is kind of what casual was supposed to be, where you're supposed to kind of be able to relax, but I still can't really do it because I'm still too much of a spike. I have started getting into Limited just to recapture that as best I can. Because when I look at a new set, if I'm thinking about Legacy or Modern, I maybe get excited about four cards from the set. But if I'm going to play Limited, I'm excited about 95% of that set.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of the same way. Like, whenever I play against my kid, I literally build my old decks that I used to play when I first started out, which was around the Lorwyn time. Like, I still have my dual decks, you know, the Elves versus Goblins, or, you know, all my little tribal decks that I built from the pre-cons and kind of beefed up a little bit. Like, that's what I think of as casual. And I think it's fun, you know? Just, you know, a tweaked up pre-con of something synergistic.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's possible to have fun. I just want to say, I think it's possible to have fun, but still admit that somebody is going to win the game. And, you know what I mean? Like, it seems pointless to me to play a game and get mad at somebody because they beat you too fast. I don't mean like first turn, but like I always see EDH people posting like, well, my opponents don't like my deck because, you know, it's too mean. I'm like, what do you mean? Are you beating them? I'm like, it may not be your deck. It may just be that they're horrible Magic players.
Well,
you
know? EDH, I think.
It's not your job to like babysit.
EDH is its own special beast because, especially if you're playing multiplayer, I feel like it's, yeah, we're there for fun and winning is fun, but the reason you're playing EDH rather than one of these other formats is because you want to see these really cool things happen. It's not meant to be the spikiest format. It's supposed to be Timmy's and Johnny's running around and still trying to win, but trying to just have fun and goof off a little bit. So, again, if you're in your own house,
I'm okay with.
Yeah. If you're with your friends and you know that, okay, we're all bringing our trying to win on turn two EDH decks and we're going to see who can win, well, that's fine. Like, and you're probably all going to have a great time. But if you take that to, hey, we all play mono green and our games go to turn 100, you're not matching the expectations. You're not playing the same game, actually. And I think that's the problem. It's just people not realizing that they're not playing the same game.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of important. Like, I know here I have a little group that I play with whenever it comes to EDH. You know, a group of about 5 or 6 of us. You know, we meet up, we'll play a multiplayer game. But we all kind of know that we're just there to dirtle around for a few turns and then try to win and see if the other person has an answer. It's fun. Like, if you know the people you're going to play against, and you know if it's more casually competitive or just straight spiky stuff, you know?
Yeah. The thing I like about Limited is you can kind of do that. You can play as hard as you can and have the other person being played as hard as they can, but still have the bad cards matter and turn 25 matters and stuff just because you're limited on – you're restricted. You know, I like those kinds of restrictions. And, you know, I – block constructed or limited or budget decks or something. That is something fun for me. It's going kind of the complete opposite from Legacy and Vintage, where there's no restrictions and no budgets and all that. But I do like it. I think that this looks like a really, really fun limited format. Some things I think are going to be really good. I'm really excited about Elves. Elves is my Legacy deck, so seeing that you can get about two-thirds the way there to draft Legacy Elves if you get lucky enough, that's exciting to me. But you know what? You know what I really want to make happen? The Hondens, the Shrines, the 5 Shrines. Do you know those cards?
I have never seen them in my life before this.
Oh, yeah. They were terrible back then, and they're terrible now, and I want to draft a deck chock full of them.
So you'll draft these and then all of your lands and then you're set, right?
I think so. I mean, if you play these, you can be dealing 5 damage per turn and putting out 5 1/1s and drawing 5 cards. That sounds like winning to me. All you need are 5 enchantments that don't do very much on their own and that cost between 3 and 5 mana. That sounds fine.
Right? Just hit your land on curve and you're good, right?
But you also need to play the red one first because it's the one that's 3 because the other ones are like, you know, 4 and 5 mana. So, you know, don't draw them out of order. But, I mean, that's easy to draw. Just draw better, right?
Just play blues. I mean,
yeah.
Just draft more of the red.
Because we know you will be getting these wheeled.
No.
Your last pick.
They're legendary. You can't play 2 red ones at the same time.
Yeah, they're legendary, too. Don't forget the
dude, that's garbage.
No, you can play 1 of each. Then you've got 5 of them.
Less fun.
It is, it's pretty bad. Well, yeah, to be fair, though, if you could draft mono red with just, like, say you got 6 of these in a draft, that would be ridiculous if they weren't legendary. They would make me happy, but it would be really ridiculous.
So, on a side note, before we start wrapping things up, isn't Braids banned in Commander, EDH, or whatever the fuck you want to call it?
I think so.
And they printed it in this set.
I mean, they printed Brainstorm, and Brainstorm's restricted in Vintage.
Yeah, but Brainstorm's sexy.
I mean, they printed, isn't, I think there's plenty of stuff that's legal in one format and not another. Now, that said, I don't think anybody plays Braids in any format, so it's just a little bit silly. But then again, nobody really plays a lot of these cards. Yeah, let's just say that Sylvos Rogue Elemental isn't banned, but I don't think it's really going to be making a splash anytime soon.
Nah. So, guys, before we go ahead and head on out here, I guess we'll go around our little table here and kind of give our thoughts on the set, like closing thoughts about it, and get on out, I guess.
Sounds good. You want to go first, Joe?
Sure. Well, I'm excited about the set. I think it's going to bring some positive changes as far as, you know, making a few things more accessible for people. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't put Flusterstorm in the set, because that's one particular card I really wanted to get and is outrageously expensive. And it does look like it would be a lot of fun to draft. Because even the cards that are, like, bad, like, not worth money, are good cards. Like, Control Magic's not something you want to open, but that's a very good card. At one time, Control Magic was in the best decks in Magic in the early 90s. It's just been outclassed by different strategies today. So I think this set's going to be really cool.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think it's going to help expand some of y'all's communities a bit. Probably not a ton, because it is a limited print run, but I think it'll definitely help have people start delving into your communities a little bit more.
Yeah. My take on it is, as far as how it's going to affect Constructed, I mean, it's all reprints. There's no new cards. So, you know, the metagames probably won't shift from it. But it is either going to make it cheaper to get into Legacy and Vintage, and or increase the number of people playing those formats. It has to do one or the other, I think probably both. So I'm excited about just the effect that it existing is going to have, even for the people who don't open it. If you do open it, it's got a lot of value. It's got a decent amount of value at rare and at uncommon. So I'm not unhappy. They let me down a little bit. Port is the big one that I was very upset about. And also, Worldly Tutor? Not a money card, but they put four of the five tutors, and they just missed the fifth one, which irritates my OCD to no end. But if you open it, it's going to be a lot of fun. Looks like a great draft environment. It's pretty good value, and it's just got a lot of fun stuff in it. Like I said, I'm going to build my own cube of this just so that I can draft it over and over again without spending $300.
Yeah, for sure. So looking at everything here, I like how they've kind of given a splash of all the different formats they could get into. I mean, literally, they hit every quote-unquote eternal format here. They did hit Legacy, they hit Vintage, and they even hit Modern. I mean, some of these elves that they reprinted, guys, I mean, and some of these white cards, those get Modern play. So I think it's sweet that they kind of hit every community that they could along the way. It's pretty sweet. Some of these cards do seem pointless for the limited format, like Goblin Charbelcher. But, you know, hey, you gotta do what you gotta do to make people happy, I guess, is what they're doing. Yeah. But, I don't think there's really much that was missed that y'all didn't really hit on. Flusterstorm, I think, is something that needed to be done. It'd be a solid little, you know, force spike or whatever for the format. It wouldn't be too much if they even put it, like, at uncommon. You know, you wouldn't see too much of it in a limited format at that point. Good job on them for making a set that people will be able to play. And hopefully, you know, with all the spikes and prices that people are having to their local shops, you know, getting greedy, hopefully those shops will realize, you know, a lot of this probably won't move for that price because there's been a lot of issues brought up about the value that you get out of your packs. Hopefully that brings it down and more people will get to play it. That's all I got to say on it. Y'all have anything else on it before we head on out here?
One last parting thing, which y'all audience might already know, but some of these cards will have foils for the first time ever. So even if it's a crappy common, if you have a foil of it, maybe check. It actually might be worth a surprising amount of money if it's the only foil of card X that's ever been made.
Yeah, I didn't even actually think about that, because most of these cards then there's ones I've never heard of that I'm sure are super old.
Well, in particular, they're uncommon, but Hydroblast and Pyroblast, those see lots of eternal play, and they're from, like, Ice Age and stuff like that. There are no foils, and people in eternal formats like to bling out their decks. So hold on to those. That's not chaff.
Sweet. All right, guys. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and head on out here. I guess we'll go around the table one more time, go ahead and get our contact info out there, you know, what we do, where you get a hold of us and all that jazz.
You can read my column on MTG Goldfish each week. That's Vintage 101, and it usually comes out on Thursday or Friday. And you can follow me on Twitter at Joseph Fiorini Jr. That's just my name spelled out. I know it's not a joke or anything like most people's
super
names.
Super original.
I thought you were supposed to put your name there, so I did.
Well, I'm Jamie Keller. I am the host of Legacy Weapon Podcast, and we have www.legacyweapon.com. You can reach me on Twitter at Jamie7, the number 7, Keller, on Twitter, or Jamie7Keller at LegacyWeapon.com.
Sweet, guys. And once again, I am Matt. You get a hold of me on Twitter. Oops, it rolled. Yes, it's in the show notes, too. Read it. Have a good time. You get a hold of us, you can reach our podcast, depending on how you're listening to it. We are on CardConfidence.com and also MTGCast.com. Join our Facebook page. Since our hiatus, I think it was like, literally I thought about it, it's been about 4 months. We are back, and we will be giving content once again. So, go ahead and join our Facebook page. We'll get back to the brews and random chats about whatever. Until next time, guys, thanks for tuning in. And Jamie and Joe, hey, thanks for spending some time with me here today.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
I appreciate it, guys.